This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.
Very much, David. David there setting very much the context to what's going to be, I think, a really engaging day of discussion about international education. We're going to go into a session now that's all about the interpretation of an international education. I'm Saul Nassay. I'm the chief executive of Cambridge English, one of the arms of Cambridge Assessment. And I'm going to start just telling you a bit about my own international learning journey, if you like. I'm pretty fresh to Cambridge Assessment. I spent 20 years at the BBC. And those 20 years were a time of incredible change at the BBC, where the BBC shifted from being very much a national broadcaster to being an international digital media organisation. So a time of big change. If you rewind back through 20 years of BBC history, you'd see Moira Stewart reading three news bulletins a day. You'd see Terry Wogan hosting Come Dancing at 10 o'clock on a Thursday night. Fast forward to now, and you've got 24-hour news channels for the UK and for the global market. You've got the BBC running the biggest news website in the world, with tailored editions for countries all around the world, with content in English, but content in everything from Persian to Hindi as well. You don't see Come Dancing. You see Strictly Come Dancing. Global phenomenon, 42 different versions made in 42 countries around the world. I, as it happens, produced the Indian version of Strictly Come Dancing. It was more Bollywood than ballroom. But that's the trick. It was not of the UK. It was of the world. So if I think about that time of change at the BBC, I draw out some themes, and I think there are themes that aren't just applicable to the media. They're themes that are applicable to the world, and they're very congruent with the sorts of things that Simon David were also talking about. I think they're important for education as well. I think you can't argue with the fact that the world's become digital. There are still billions of people waiting to get online, but there are billions of people who are online, and that digital experience very much shapes the world. It's also a world where that digital world is always on. There's no getting away from it. It's live on your phone, in your pocket. It's on every device you use. We now never turn off from the experience of consuming the services that David talks about. It's also always international. At every point, you're interacting with a bit of content on that digital world. You're presented with a range of international pieces of content that you can come up with as well. But I think as all of that multiplies, as we get more and more sorts of content appearing digitally, more and more international content appearing, what people are searching for ever more is world-class content, content that really is the best, content that's actually going to change their lives. And I think, and this comes back to the Strictly Come Dancing example, people don't want generic content. They want content that's localised to them. They want content that works in the place that they're living in. And even bigger than that, actually works for them as an individual. There's no point just creating stuff that works for, you know, a generic person. It needs to work for you sitting in that chair now. It's got to be for you. So those were the themes that actually shaped my last job at the BBC, which was running the education department there. And what I've found interesting is as I've moved into Cambridge English, those themes stand just as strongly in the work we're doing. And as I meet stakeholders around the world, I get a sense that those themes are the ones we're working to. I'd add one more thing in, and that's the power of English. David and Simon talked about English and its role in education. I think English is becoming the language of that changed world. So it's the language of business, it's the language of international communication, it's actually the language of the internet. And I think increasingly we can all make the argument that it's becoming the language of education. My most recent visit was to India, and I saw those themes playing out there. Got a real sense of hunger for English language learning from the stakeholders that I met there. And going back to that point of quality, people really searching for stuff that works, teaching that works, learning that works, assessment that works. They want it based on evidence that it's really internationally performing. People want digital content, they want teacher training, and they want assessment that isn't just about testing the child. They want assessment that's about encouraging learning, an assessment that's testing that their education system is delivering as it should be. But it was also interesting being in India, thinking about some of the very specific contexts there that make it rather different from other places we operate in. One of the key ones there is that English, you know, isn't a foreign language in India. English is the language spoken by the elite. So learning English isn't necessarily about interacting with people abroad or emigrating. It's actually about accessing parts of society that you're not going to be able to reach otherwise. So there's something specific there about what we need to do with our international content to make it local for the people there. But in a way, there's no point in me standing here and talking about what I found out in India, because we're about to be joined by another of our international bases. I think we should have India available on the line. We should have Ruchira Ghosh from Cambridge International Exam. So, Ruchira, tell us who you've got there and the sorts of things that you're already starting to talk about around the table.
Well, good afternoon and namaste from India. Are you able to hear me first?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Okay, great. So I'm going to quickly first pass on to my colleague Vinayak to introduce our participants from India, and then we will share briefly with you what we've been discussing about international education. So Vinayak, could you quickly introduce our guest here?
Sure. Thank you, everybody. It's a pleasure to be part of this. Starting from across me, Dr. Saroj Anand from P.P. Soni International School. Welcome to you, ma'am. We have Rahi from the Utpal Sangvi School, Kavita from the Universal School, Snehal Pinto, Director and Chairman, Ryan Global School. We have Father Jude Fernandez from the Spanish Law School, Sister Blanche also joining us from the Spanish Law School. We have Mrs. Radhika from the Aditya Birla World Academy. And to her left is Father Bosco from the Don Bosco Schools group in India. And we have Rajan from Podar World School, India. And Savita Venkat from the Bombay Cambridge School. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Can I pass it back to Ms. Ruchira Ghosh?
Thank you, Vinayak. We have here a group of very experienced Cambridge schools, as well as our new friends who are joining the Cambridge school community very soon or have just started the journey. So it's a very interesting group to work with and to hear their views on international education. Just to quickly share with all of you who are part of the conference in the UK, what we did was we got everyone to think about an image or a symbol they would associate with the phrase education without borders. And of course, we can't possibly show you everything that everybody came up with, but we had some interesting examples coming up. But I'm certainly going to ask Mrs. Savita Venkat to talk about some of the challenges that Indian schools face while delivering international education, particularly where our society is so bogged down by the academic results, by the competitive exams, which seem to hold the passport for successful future of young people. So I'm going to now ask Mrs. Savita Venkat, who heads Bombay Cambridge School, to briefly share what the group has discussed together.
Thank you, Ruchira. And hi, everybody. And we've had a wonderful discussion here about the challenges in international education. But then if we go back to the Indian culture, we believe that Vasudeva Kudumbakam means world is a family. So we were always in the global area. But yet we have our challenges because our society has evolved. And some of the challenges we face are that there's a perception that getting into an international education or curriculum means we go into a Western culture, leaving behind the Indian culture. Now, this perception has to be moved out to the stakeholders. It's a myth. And if that goes out, then the road towards international education is faster. Then we have another challenge, which is the introduction of subjects like global perspectives and environmental management. These are not recognized by the local government here or the boards here or the colleges here. So students are hesitant to take these subjects because they need to move into the local colleges later. The other challenge is that the stakeholders feel that they lack, the curriculum lacks the local flavor. So if the local flavor is added, then I think it will move out. And we are still, as Ruchira pointed out, academic oriented, mark oriented and competitive. And this comes in the way as a big challenge because learning does not happen then. It becomes only memorization for marks. And we rate the marks to success here. And this needs to move out if we have to be very keen on international education. And we are performance-oriented instead of learning-oriented. So we need to focus more on learning rather than performance. And if this happens, then we are moving towards global education. Thank you so much. That's what our group felt here. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, and we're looking forward to listening to the other speakers today.
Thanks, Ruchira. Thanks, Mrs. Venkat. Thanks to the group over there in India.
This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.